This is an Enterprise Times podcast sponsored by Unit 4. My name is Steve Brooks, and today I'm talking to Chris Richards, Regional President, UK and I at Unit 4. We will discuss some of the decisions that business leaders need to make as their organisations ready themselves for the future. Hi, Chris.
Hiya, Steve. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Could you just tell me a little bit about yourself?
25 years in the software industry. Different types of roles, mainly in sales or sales leadership roles, but also had a stint for 3 years at client side at Morgan Stanley delivering projects. So lived and breathed a lot of the challenges and changes in the software business over the last 25 years. However, probably none so accelerated and different over the last 12 months with all the things we've had to deal with. A long time in this business.
That's what we're going to talk about today, the impact of COVID-19, the pandemic and lockdown, and what it's meant to organisations and how quickly they've had to change. Some technology vendors are using the crisis to advocate the deployment of cloud software. In the past, there have been many promises about cloud software, but what difference is there now from a year ago? Is it easier to identify the real benefits of SaaS solutions now?
I think the answer to that is absolutely yes. If you think how quickly we had to adapt and change when we were hit with COVID and offices were closed. I was actually in Dublin the day it was announced in Ireland at a university, and they said, look, we're sending everybody home today. They had to figure out how do they get content distributed to their students? How do the teachers get access? If you had legacy on-premise PC-based systems, you were in trouble. Great quotes from a couple of our customers, East England Ambulance Service, Forest Research, was they would have been absolutely stumped without cloud software, without being able to access their crucial systems from any place, anywhere, anybody, switch things on very quickly. So I would say all the payback has probably been in the last 12 months from a cloud software perspective.
But there are some solutions out there that on-premise applications like Citrix can leverage to deliver the remote working quite easily. So how is cloud better?
I do think we need to differentiate between cloud software, which could be just hosted. It could be Citrix versus SaaS, true SaaS, which is software as a service, which is a utility. It is literally a subscription. You're subscribing to a capability from a provider that you don't have to worry about anything else, just access to a web browser. And that allows real agility, real flexibility. And the other huge benefit from SaaS is the continuous innovation that you have. You're not having to worry about reviewing whether you need to upgrade that system. Does the latest version deliver the value you need versus the cost it's going to take to implement it? True SaaS is complete flexibility, agility, but continuous innovation, which organisations today really need to leverage to differentiate from their competitors.
A couple of points there you mentioned. One, I think you're talking about cloud or SaaS is really utility computing by offering subscription software. It's not like you buy your licenses and then you have it hosted in some location and accessing them remotely. SaaS gives you the flexibility and the scalability that may not previously be important. So operational costs can flex, one assumes. How does that make a difference to business today in the pandemic?
It's in the pandemic, but also generally how it makes a difference to businesses today. If you think about Unit 4 and what we provide back office solutions, finance, HR, payroll, projects, procurement, all of those type of capabilities. As an organisation, you want your people to be focused on what they do best. If you're a professional services organisation, you're providing consultancy. If you're a local government, you're providing services to your community. You want organisations to focus on that. You don't want the investment and worrying about software systems, capability, functionality. With SaaS, ultimately it has to be fit for purpose. It has to deliver what you need it to do. But you subscribe to a capability. The crucial thing there is it delivers what you need to do. It allows your people to focus on their main job. But you get consistent, continuous innovation through a number of factors. One is there's usually within a SaaS capability, SaaS organization, there's a community of customers who are all driving with similar challenges, similar business objectives, driving that technology forward. You can just consume that every day, every month, updates will be just put into that system. in a pandemic, I don't think that genuinely makes too much difference in terms of that innovation aspect. It's just that you haven't got the opportunity to be in an office. You haven't necessarily got the opportunity to be in the same room, to drive ideas together.
When you say enable innovation, that sounds like it's a big cultural change for what we're used to, implementing an ERP, leaving it for 5 years or 10 years, implementing another version. You're talking about continuous innovation. How big a challenge is that cultural difference within organisations?
That's really interesting, because it is actually, you know, CIOs, business leaders need to get their head around that you don't have this major upgrade every 3 years and you budget for this huge cost. SaaS, because of the innovation and because of the service, is not necessarily going to save you money. It isn't about TCO. I mean, generally, it should work out more cost effective. But if you're not geared up to take advantage of that innovation, then you are missing a trick. I liked your statement, actually, Steve, around, you know, why subscribe to a cheese platter every month if you don't want to taste the new cheeses? And I think that's exactly the same with SaaS. You pay within your subscription fee, and there'll be indexation, I'm sure, around the renewals, is you're paying for that innovation. You're paying for those updates to go in. And culturally, you need to be set up to be able to take advantage of that. And it's really, really important that you do. Otherwise, you will just fall behind and you're not truly getting the value of what SaaS can deliver for your organization. That's a real shame, because it's there for the taking. You haven't got a budget. You haven't got a plan. You've got to be set up to be able to take advantage of that innovation, which is there as a utility. You turn it on, you subscribe, it's there to take. You've just got to make sure you are taking advantage of it. So I think you're spot on. There is a definite cultural shift to major projects, getting everybody in the room to agree that we're going to take this new release with these new features and functions because it adds value, to it's like a tap. It's just there, continuously dripping new innovation that you need to take advantage of. I once heard a statement which did stick with me, which was find your Elon Musks in your organization. Allow them to grow. Allow them to try things. Because every organisation has Elon Musks, but sometimes they're just not allowed to be what they need to be. Ask your leaders to look out for those people, because they're the gold dust. They're the ones who come up with the new ideas and change the future of your organisation.
How do you find those people?
I think you've got to be looking for them to start with. We're so wrapped up with all the problems of yesterday and all the issues of tomorrow that we're actually not looking for them. We're not looking. We're looking to deliver on what we see today. We need to look for those people. We need to actively look for them. We need to get leaders looking for these types of people who, I think we all know who they are, actually. They always come up with good ideas. But you need to invest. You need to give them time. You need to give them space to do what they need to do. They get suppressed. To find them, you've got to be looking in the first place.
And give them permission to fail, but fail quickly.
Got to invest in them. It's a really interesting one, because I can think of people in Unit 4, and do we say, right, okay, we'll take you out. Just go and solve that issue for me. I don't care how you do it. Go and figure it out. We don't, because there's so much other stuff that they need to be doing. As I said, all of the day-to-day work that we're bogged down in, that we're not looking for those people and we're not allowing them the space, maybe even the investment, to go off and innovate, and be creative, look at things differently, not the same way we've always done it.
My perspective is that business leaders pre-pandemic resisted change. They have had to change. Once you've had to change, the next change is easier. And I just wonder whether you've seen an examples of that, where business leaders are previously reticent about change, especially maybe in public sector. Suddenly now they're actually embracing change and thinking, actually, no, we need to do this. We need to implement cloud solutions. We need to implement the changes that our cloud updates give us as well.
There's definitely been an element of that. Even if I look within our own organisation, people working from home was, for some leaders, was a real no-no. There's a trust issue. They needed to see people physically at their desk. Incontrovertibly, working from home is proven to drive, actually, in a lot of cases, improved productivity. It's worked. It took that, almost being forced to do it, for some leaders to be able to accept that that is an acceptable way to work. So I do believe the pandemic has made us think about things very differently. We've had no choice. We've had to do certain aspects of that. Will that continue? I'd love to think it would. I really would love to think that people take what we've dealt with, the ability to change, adapt. Interestingly, I was chatting to a university in Dublin, and they had to get all their content online for their students. It took them 2 weeks. The CIO there said to me, if this had been pre-pandemic and we were deciding to put our content online for our students, it would have been probably a 12-month project. So that example of how quickly you can do something when you're forced to, when you get people together and you just make decisions and it doesn't have to be perfect, there's a clear demonstration that it can be done. My worry is that we tend to revert back quite quickly to normality, which is something we've experienced for the past 20 years. So I'd love to think that we continue with this flexible, agile, make decisions quickly, get things done attitude. Change is positive. Change can be quick. It doesn't need to be complex. It doesn't need to be a 2-year project, which is what SaaS is all about. It is exactly that mindset. Implement an ERP over the next 10 years. You implement it in 6 to 9 months and it consistently and constantly changes to adapt to your business. I'd love to think that's where we get to and that's what we continue with. But Steve, I'm not sure. I think some people will revert back to type.
Are there any things that you believe that business leaders should do to anchor the changes that we've had over the last few months because of COVID?
The main reason why people tend to revert back is those changes need to come from the top and they need to be consistent. As soon as individuals feel that that isn't the culture, that isn't what we're driving from the top down. So I think to anchor those changes, there has to be support and adoption across the whole organisation. Leaders need to lead the way with that consistently. They need to step out of their comfort zone and do things. If that's consistent and from the top, and that's one way to anchor it. The other thing is to consistently communicate the value and the benefits of what's happened. People are often afraid of change. They're afraid of making mistakes. We've always done it this way. You need to create a culture whereby people feel they can try something and it fails and you learn from it and you improve on it. And again, that needs to come from the top. So I think it's a cultural thing. I think it's commitment from senior execs all the way down. It is around creating an environment where people feel they can change, they can try different things, and to communicate why things are working and what that has meant to the organisation in terms of those changes and what difference that's made in people's lives, in people's jobs, to our customers. It's communication and commitment from senior leadership to really anchor those changes and that culture within an organisation.
When you say communication, are there any smart ways you've seen people do that? Because it's not easy nowadays. You can't just call everyone into a room together and have a chat. And Zoom is great, but limited in some ways.
Yeah, Zoom fatigue, I think, is a new phrase that's probably going to hit the dictionary. It's really fascinating, actually, Steve. I joined Unit 4 in November. I've been here, 10, 11 months, and the majority of that I've been at home. And I've probably communicated more. I've got people in my team who I've never met face-to-face. The things that we've done, obviously you can't see people physically, so we've done regular town halls, we've done newsletters. Twice a week we just do a check-in call. It's completely informal. How's everybody doing? It is just purely around just making sure everybody's okay, what the challenge is, how are their people doing, any ideas. The other thing was certain teams were having virtual drinks. We also have a pulse survey that we send out every Monday morning, asks 5 questions, we review the answers, and it really does check the temperature of the organisation across 10 different aspects. And that's been really important. And we've seen the scores, the engagement scores, a number of the scores actually improve. There's been some drop in mental health, wellness, something that's been of a concern, but we've been aware of it. We've been able to proactively do something about it. So it has to take a number of forms. The anonymous pulsing, really checking the temperature of the organisation has been really crucial for us as a business throughout the pandemic. And actually moving forward, it was something we were doing before then, but it really came into its own through not being able to physically see people. So a number of aspects, and I think we've handled it pretty well, actually, and the team feel cared for and a priority at this unusual time.
I hesitate to say we're emerging from lockdown because it doesn't appear though we are at the moment. But how do you see things happening over the next few months? In theory, the vaccine is due out early next year. Do you think we'll see some sort of return to an office or will offices change?
I think they will definitely change, Steve. Really definitely change. We've opened our offices in the UK in September. We've delayed our office opening in Dublin a couple of weeks because we've seen a little increase over there. We've restricted capacity to 30%, so you can socially distance. We've only seen 15% capacity, if that. I talked to my team and we're desperate to get together and we're going to set up a team meeting. We need to get a room big enough so we can socially distance. There's an element of people desperate to get back to see people, but it will be for very different reasons. You will not go back to an office now and work as if you could work from home. So the reason you'll go into an office is for collaboration, to drive ideas. It will be for team meetings, for team building. The days of sitting at your desk and just doing email, I just think have gone. I really do, certainly from a Unit 4 perspective. We hired a global head of workspace before the pandemic, and we had this view that we wanted to change our office environments, sort of more collaboration spaces, innovation spaces. We wanted customer visitor centres to be creative rather than just an open plan office with everyone sitting at their desk. And we had that idea before. One of the potential blockers to that was leaders not believing that people can work from home. As we've said before, COVID has proven that's not the case. So I see it dramatically different in the future. I really do. It's what people need, the balance and flexibility of being at home. I'm a mum with three kids. And being at home, not having to do a four-hour commute every day, makes a huge amount of difference. But I desperately want to also see my team and share ideas and build relationships that you can't just do virtually. It'll be a real balance of the both. People are still quite nervous. Every individual is very different in terms of how they view the interaction and the risks associated with COVID. Until we have a full vaccine, nobody's going to be 100% confident. They've always got somebody at home or somebody that they're worried about that they could infect. Even with vaccines, the workplace has changed, and it's changed forever, in my view.
You raise an interesting point there. There's a theme I'm not seeing highlighted much, but I think it's underpinning it, and that's the individual, and everybody's circumstances is different. How do business leaders cope with that? Because previously you ran by departments, you say, right, this is your working practice in that department. Do business leaders need to consider the individual requirements more than they have done pre-pandemic?
Absolutely. We've really seen in Unit 4 a real spread of how risk averse somebody is. You know, there is a risk if you go into the office and you're in an office with other individuals rather than being in your own home. There is a risk. And depending on your health, your personal health, your family's health, your attitudes, your mental awareness, there's so many factors to take into account. We've surveyed individuals. We're a reasonable sized organisation, but it has to come down to individuals because this could be a matter of life or death. It really could be that serious. You need the technology and the ability to survey and understand what people need. And people have to come first. Fundamentally, no business is a business without people.
You talk about survey. Is that the only technology that people require, or are there some other technologies that the businesses need to invest in going forward?
In terms of what people want, if you think about offices, if you've got office space for 10,000 people and you're at 15% capacity and your individuals no longer want to come into the office on a permanent basis or whatever that might be, then there's a huge cost there. So obviously that would need to be reviewed. In terms of then in a new world, the world we're actually in and continuing to move into, of having a system where you have reduced office space, people go into offices for different reasons, then there's going to be considerable review of technology generally in that organisation to support. A lot of people have put sticky plasters and bandages on their IT to be able to get people working from home. How do you plan effectively? There's so many elements to this that people would now need to sit back and review and say, in our new world, where we actually are not going to have four or five offices in the UK or globally or whatever it might be, what do we need in order to support that? What does our business look like in the future? Where do we need to invest? What do we need? So technology will underpin all of that in terms of what that is. Who knows? But it will look very different, particularly in public sector, where no one worked from home in public sector organisations. No one has laptops. We're a sales organisation, pretty much. Everyone had a laptop. I had a home-based contract. It'll look very different, and I think technology will underpin that.
Unit 4 has a lot of public sector clients. Are you seeing change in public sector? Because having worked in it myself, it's not an organisation that changes quickly often, shall we say.
No, it isn't. We have a considerable number of public sector customers who are still on premise with their technology. We also have many that are in the cloud. and many that we're talking to move into the cloud. COVID has absolutely raised the need for flexibility, modern IT. But public sector is tricky. They've been hit very hard with COVID because of funding. But we are definitely seeing an increase in public sector organisations, particularly local authority, local government, which is where we focus, reviewing their technology stack and absolutely looking for a SaaS-based solution. But they have to plan. Their processes are long. It doesn't happen quickly. From agreeing that you want to change and invest in technology, the process is probably 12 months just to actually appoint and contract with somebody, which is a long time compared to a commercial-based organisation who could probably turn that around in 3 months. But there's definitely a change. There's definitely a shift, and COVID has definitely accelerated that.
And with that shift to cloud, and not just private and public sector here, where does that leave the IT function? Because they no longer have to support masses of computers within a single building. There's a shift to cloud software, so they no longer have their data centers going forward. What is the future role of the CIO and of his department?
I think the role of the CIO has changed and will continue to change significantly. I think it's still a really important function, and I think the AI information is the crucial component of a CIO. Probably a bit of a double-edged sword with SaaS is that it can enable shadow IT. Marketing, sales, HR, finance can basically talk to an organization like Unit 4 and figure out what they need and contract and sign up without even involving their IT department, potentially. The role of the CIO is fundamentally changing to become more of a governance function, but importantly, really importantly, to stop those silos of information. So if each individual department goes out and buys a system what they think suits their needs and requirements, you have got silos of data. And we know that information is power. Information is really important. The CIO will be around governance. It will be focused on integrating these systems, and it will be around driving value out of the data. It won't be about keeping the lights on anymore. And actually, that role's been changing for some time, but it will be really important that they have control and governance over that information that that organisation has and how to leverage it.
As a business leader, what do you think are the top three priorities that other leaders need to consider about the changing workplace over the next year?
There's probably two. The first one is the people in their organisations. What do they need? What do they want? How do you retain and grow the talent? How do you improve productivity? How do you make sure that your most important asset is okay and is able to still grow and do all the things that they need to do? I think that's really, really important. And we've touched on some of the ways to do that, but probably the biggest priority in the changing workplace, because the workplace implies people. The second one is the customers or your prospects. In terms of the changing workplace, how are you going to continue to best service your customers? And then underpinning that, what investment, what technology is going to help you deliver those two in the climate that we're in, the very different world we're in now? The two top ones are your people and your customers. And really thinking about how you support both of those to maintain a business and achieve all the goals that you set out to do.
How do you stop people falling between the cracks? Because it sounds great, but people can drop off the radar fairly easily, especially in remote working.
It's difficult, particularly in a very large organisation. It does come back to leadership. It is about checking in with people, regular team meetings, regular one-to-ones. I personally have one-to-ones every other week with my team. I have a monthly UKI leadership team meeting. I have a bi-weekly sales leadership meeting. I do a quarterly town hall. I do weekly check-ins. I make sure that my team are having regular one-to-ones with their team. There is no way around it apart from ensuring you make time for the people who work for you. And you ask the right questions to make sure they are. You can tell if somebody's maybe from an output perspective, if there's challenges. There's no way around it. You need to talk to your people. You need to communicate. You need to make time.
Chris, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Steve. Great to talk to you.